Welcome back to LiveWire. Lois Levine claims to dwell in the spaces where literature and history meet. She is a regular contributor to Disunion. It's the New York Times coverage of the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. That's 150 years if you are not a sesquicentennial enthusiast like myself. And her poetry and essays have appeared in the Los Angeles Review of Books, Huffington Post, and on NPR. Her first book, The Secrets of Mary Bowser, is a historical novel based on the true story of a former slave, an abolitionist who returns to Virginia to pose as a slave again in the Confederate White House and spy on President Jefferson Davis. Please welcome Lois Levine to LiveWire. Welcome to the show, Lois.
Thanks, Courtney.
So I wanted to talk to you about the book, but I also, you wrote a great piece about writing a historical novel for the Powell's website, and I wanted to just have you read that if you could.
Sure, I'd be happy to. What keeps a novelist up at night? It's fear of a red tractor. Have you ever longed for the good old days when dentist, barber, and surgeon was a single occupation? Okay, maybe those days weren't so good. But at least back then, the dentist was too busy to be a literary critic, too. My dentist, however, is another matter. Last year, while giving my molars the once over, my dentist told me about a book he'd been reading, a book he really liked until he got to a description of a red John Deere tractor in a field. He immediately put the book down, never to finish it, because, as he put it, everyone knows John Deere has never made a red tractor. That was put in there by some New York editor. Only a Portland dentist can make New York editor sound so evil. Authors and our editors are always trying to add specific descriptions to our books to make things seem more real. But if you get that real detail wrong, you blow it big time. As it happens, one of my New York editors is originally from Virginia, where much of my novel, The Secrets of Mary Bowser, is set. And this editor suggested that the bird's nest I tucked into a magnolia tree on the very first page of the book should be in a dogwood instead. Dogwoods are the state tree of Virginia, so that would sound, you know, more specific, less generically Southern. Now, I'd already verified that magnolia trees grew in Richmond in the period in which The Secrets of Mary Bowser takes place. But here was a bona fide Virginian making the case for a dogwood. So what did I do? Being an obsessed lunatic, I contacted the Virginia State Arborist, peppering him with questions about, you know, whether a bird would actually nest in a dogwood if it were in the exact location of the tree on page one of my novel. Only when he said yes did I make the change. This level of obsession can take an awful lot out of a novelist. When I was reading the final galleys of my book, I realized I'd made a reference to a straight razor. That's the old-timey kind of razor that Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street, would use to slit the throat of his hapless victims. My book is set in the 19th century, when straight razors were the only kind of razors available. But that actually means nobody would say straight razor. They'd just say, razor. Maybe this is not the kind of error that would make a dentist come barber slit your throat, but why risk it? So Mary Bowser was a real person, a former slave who became a Union spy in the Confederate White House. But in writing a novel about her, I focused on crafting a compelling story, which means sometimes I did intentionally deviate from what I knew to be true. And since finishing the novel, I've unearthed new facts about Bowser, because I am an obsessed lunatic and I cannot stop researching. But some of the things that I made up in the novel, I later learned out actually happened, which kind of gives me goosebumps. Hard as it was for me to make the novel accurate, I still worry about what, in those devilish details, I might have gotten wrong. So if you happen upon a big old red John Deere in the field of my fiction, please forgive me. And please, do not tell my dentist.
That was Lois Levine. You're listening to LiveWire. We're talking to her about her book, The Secrets of Mary Bowser. What was interesting to me after reading that piece and just knowing sort of how obsessive you are about facts was wondering why you chose to fictionalize this, because it seems like you are so... The facts are important. What really happened is important.
Well, part of it is that actually very little can be documented about Mary Bowser's life. So this is a... For a biographer, it would be a really awful thing because there's so much you want to know that you can't know. But for a novelist, it's fantastic because you have the true historical hook and then you get to make a lot of stuff up.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about how the book is based on real events and newspaper clippings and correspondence. What kind of correspondence were you able to find?
Well, you can go through and read like every letter written by every general to... And I did that only as much as I needed to. But there's lots of juicy stuff. Mary Bowser was owned by the Van Loo family, and she was freed by the daughter of the family, Bette Van Loo. And so she and Bette worked together in the spy ring. And Bette Van Loo was exactly what you want. Her life is better documented. And she's sort of crazy in all the right ways. They used to call her Crazy Bette Van Loo. And I should say that some of the weirdest things that happen in the novel are things that Bette really did. Like... digging up a body because she felt it wasn't buried with enough dignity, and so sneaking out and digging it up and moving it to someplace to bury it, you know, with the proper dignity, which I think is what we'll all want when we're dead.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, but not a good idea when you're in the middle of espionage. You know,
it
you're trying to keep things secret.
Yeah. Eyes on the prize there, Bette. Yeah.
Exactly. Eyes on the prize. So a little backstory, I guess, about Mary and kind of how this started happening. She was actually freed by Betty, and Betty actually sent her to Philadelphia to study. But she actually didn't have a great experience in Philadelphia so much.
Well, first of all, getting your freedom often meant leaving your family, your community, everybody you ever knew, and going someplace that is not only totally foreign to you, but although there was no slavery in Philadelphia, there also was no legal equality. So she's someplace where discrimination in education and housing and employment, even in who can ride public transit, is mm-hmm. totally legal. So trying to make sense of that as a fairly young woman on her own is kind of overwhelming.
Well, and do you think that negative experience had anything to do with her decision to come back and pose as a slave in order to...
You know, one of the things that is trying to think about her life as she would live it, because the novel's in first person, so I'm telling, it's as though Mary is telling the story, is to imagine what it would be like to give up your freedom to walk back into slavery. I mean, to have no protection, to risk your life. And we know how the war ends, but she didn't.
Yeah.
So to do that without knowing how long you'd have to do it for or even what you'd have to do and whether it would have that outcome is sort of astounding. So trying to imagine what would bring her to that decision was part of what was the kind of the emotional hook of the story for me.
Well, and you wrote about the experience for her in the book. You've written it as becoming invisible again.
Yeah.
What did you imagine that felt like for her?
You know, somebody said, I just can't believe that nobody would be suspicious of her just because she was black. And I think, you know, probably lots of women would say that they have had the experience of people of being in some situation where you were assumed not to be quite as smart as you are just because you're female. It's interesting how both she and Bette would have played on femininity as well as the way that she played on race to completely undermine the system that was insisting that these things were true.
There's an Emerson quote at the very beginning of the book. If the whole of history is in one man, it is all to be explained from individual experiences. What aspect of the Civil War do you think is best illustrated by her story?
We love the story of the Civil War because it is a story where we really think like good is triumphing. But in fact, the Civil War was incredibly destructive. 750,000 soldiers died. Many civilians died, not from, you know, disease. There was hunger throughout the South. There were food riots throughout the South. And so what would it mean to have this thing that you care about so much, the one thing that you wish for so much, hinge on something that was incredibly destructive? And over the course of the novel, the section of the Civil War, that gets closer and closer to home for Mary. What does it mean? So I think in some ways that is really like the national story. What does it mean to believe we have, you know, these great values, but to make those values true the cost is so enormous.
Yeah, she had some great costs to herself and her family, yeah. And so, yeah, she was a great sort of symbol for all of that in that way. Are you working on another historical novel?
Yes.
Are you? What's it about?
I can't tell you or my agent would kill me.
Okay.
I'm even more scared of her than I am of my dentist. And she doesn't have any drills.
Okay, well, we'll wait for that to happen. The book is The Secrets of Mary Bowser. The author is Lois Levine. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.